morning during meditation, I mentioned to bring your attention what is right before you. To bring your attention on what is right before you. It sounds easy enough, doesn't it? And our everyday life is certainly involves that attention, but we are also well adept at diverting that attention with a very active and creative minds and emotional and conceptual baggage. So when we come to a situation like a meditation situation, we have to cook a bit. We have to go to work, in a sense, on this very simple and basic activity of being here and now, right here and now. Being with what is right before us, with what we are. We have lots of ideas and concepts, and of course we have our personal history. Sometimes we come to a situation like this with very idealistic views about being better or being complete or being whole or being, dare I say, enlightened or realized. John, could you get me a glass of water,
yes, please? Sure.
I brought my attention right to my thirst. My mouth is a little dry. Even in the Buddhist time, a time of 2500, 2600 years ago in India, was a time of a lot of spiritual interest, and there were a lot of what we might call spiritual romantics. They had many views about reality and truth and realization. And they came to the Buddha with those questions sometimes. And one time the Buddha was approached with a question about oneness. It's called sabba in Pali. It also means all or completion or unity. And this is how he kind of brought it home. The Buddha said, "I will teach you the all. I will teach you sabba. Listen to what I say. What is the all? The eye and forms, the ear and sounds, the nose and scents, the tongue and tastes, the body and tactile objects, the mind and thoughts. This is called the all." Someone might say, "I reject this all. I will declare another all." But because that is simply a groundless assertion, such a person, when asked about it, would not be able to explain and would meet with distress. What is the reason for that distress? Because that is not within his or her sensorium. Sensorium means the field of all the field of the senses, the complete field of the senses. Thank you. Thanks, John.
Sure.
A commentator said that about this statement, he said that the Buddha was originally came from a farming community. So he was not an astrologer, for instance. He was close to the earth. He was of the earth. The commentator said, perception involves the givenness of the world, sensory reception, and response. The Buddha's project was to help us realize phenomena at its most basic level, to put down the burden of the superfluous. When we sit together, we come home to our bodies and our minds, just as they are. And we have a responsibility, you could say, that arises from the request that brought us here to arrive at the present moment. We think we have to arrive or establish something better than what we are. But that's not so. There's a very common Zen statement. You've probably heard it. It just says, ordinary mind is the way, or everyday mind is the way. Sometimes it's phrased as original mind is the way, or your original face is the way. Here's a little story about that. Typical Zen story. A student named Joshu, Zhaozhou, asks Nansen, comes to meet the teacher Nansen. Nanjuan, and he says, what is the way? What's the way? What's it all about? Or even, what should I do? What is the way? Nansen says, ordinary mind is the way. Joshu says, shall I try for that? Nansen says, if you can try for it. But if you try for it, you'll miss it. If you try for it, you'll be separate from it. Joshu said, how can I know the way unless I try for it? Nansen replied, "The way is not a matter of knowing, nor is it a matter of not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is confusion. Reach beyond doubt, and you will see it is vast, boundless like the sky." That's it. That's the story. What is the way? Or if someone was to come to you and say, "What should I do?" And you were to reply, "Just be yourself," or "Just come home to yourself," or "Just accept the mind that is right before you," how would you feel? A little let down? Like you weren't fed like you wanted to be fed. Ordinary mind, my everyday mind, the mind that picks up a glass, the mind that sits down, the mind that carries around a personal history, the mind that doubts, the mind that is afraid, the mind that has concerns, the mind that is anxious, the mind that is happy, the mind that is spaced out. Can we exclude any of that from ordinary mind? In Buddhist history, they do not spend much time talking about what we might call altered states or realized states or enlightenment or realization. Those words are sometimes applied to this way. Incidentally, you might say, or almost like a sales gimmick, they're applied as kind of almost an implication of what is already here. What is talked about a lot in Buddhism is what obscures the way, what is problematic for the way. So we have these conditions that are called the five hindrances. Buddhism talks a lot about what is the five hindrances. So there's sensory attachment to sensory desires. There's ill will or anger. There's restlessness and there's worry. There's a sloth and torpor, and there's doubt or vacillation. Buddhism talks a lot about that. Buddhism talks about what's called the three kleshas, the three poisons. It's sometimes termed as greed, hate, and delusion, or attachment, aversion, and ignorance or delusion. In original Buddhism, the definition of someone who is realized, they do not necessarily talk about their qualities of realization. How they define an arhat, someone who is realized, is simply someone who has stopped the outflows, stopped the asravas, they're called. Outflows, they're called outflows. Sometimes they're defined as effluence, sometimes it's described as leaking. So someone who is not an arhat is someone who's still leaking. They're still leaking. What does that mean, to leak? Well, you can leak many, many ways. You can dissipate the energy of your life, the energy of your consciousness, by bringing a view or a concept to the situation and harm that situation or harm the person you're meeting with a view. Or you can carry around a fixed idea of what should be done, or what you are, or what the situation is, and not meet the situation as it is. Or you can have a view of enlightenment, or realization, or truth, and not be in accord with what is right before you, and not and be able to meet what is right before you. You can bring a self to the situation, in other words. You can bring and you can leak that way. You can also flood. Another way of describing this is you can flood your experience this is called dith asrava. Asrava means, literally it means to stain. You can stain a situation with a view. This is called, in Sanskrit, it's called dith asrava. You can also stain the situation with attachment or grasping or trying to hold on to something that is fundamentally ungraspable and always changing. A kind of greed or hunger or fear of changing it is leaking. So in the beginning of the Sangha in India, these arhats, these disciples of the Buddha, the definition of an arhat was they had stopped this leaking. So, do you see how that they do not necessarily define any kind of altered state or any kind of special state in Buddhism? Instead, they talk about what obscures the natural state, the the ordinary mind, the everyday mind, the natural mind. Big one for us sometimes is not so much attachment or grasping or holding on to things, but holding on to a view, holding on to a concept or a view or an attitude. So big job for us is to work with that. This same Joshu, who asked the question, later became a Zen master in his own right and a new student came to him and said, teacher, I've just entered the monastery and please give me some instruction. And Joshu said, have you eaten? And the student said, you probably know this story, it's well known. Oh yes, I've eaten well. Joshua said, wash your bowls. It's a really great teaching. On one level, we could analyze it and say, the student came with an idea of what a student was. He was well fed with his view of what Buddhism was or what a student was or what the truth was. And the teacher said, have you eaten? And he said, yes, I know I've eaten. I'm full of the truth. And the teacher said, well, please clean up after yourself. please take care of your life. Please do your chores. Please take care of what needs to be taken care of. Take care of these simple things in life. And that was his practice. And apparently it was a great help to that student. Views are a big issue for us. There's this term called noble cause corruption. Have you heard this term? Noble cause corruption. It's when you have an apparently noble cause and you actually corrupt your environment with your idealism. So in our practice, let's come back home. Let's come back home to ordinary mind. Ordinary mind is the way. The mind of when we're eating, just eat. When we're resting, just rest. When we're meditating, just face the wall and come home to our body and our mind just as they are. Just follow our breath, just as shikan, as in shikantaza, just. What do you think? Is that too hard to do? Would anyone like to comment or have anything to say?
Just to clarify, maybe for some people, process of doing zazen, of sitting meditation, quiet the mind. If you reach pretty good silence, you don't have distractions, you're able to see what's always there. You can give it whatever name you like, your true nature or whatever. And it doesn't have, it's not a conceptual thing, it's reality. I'm just trying to say, maybe some people here who will not make that connection unless I say that, so I'm going to say that. Thank you.
I was thinking about how you interpreted that story, the world famous story about watching the bull. And how you first explained it as, you know, he's full. And in a way, to me, washing the bowls always meant sort of the words ran away.
Sometimes it's interpreted as ethical behavior. So the person, another way is that story is interpreted, he came with ideas about concepts, mm-hmm. about what Buddhism was, and to wash your bowls is sila, it's right conduct. So the teacher sort of brought him back home and said, please take care of your, please clean up your life. Please take care of your activity. Is that what you were about to say?
No, but thank you for another interpretation. I guess I'm thinking more of just to let go of some of that stuff you already know. You know, like, but don't have that sitting in front of seeing what's in front of you. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Counterpoint to this is that we do aspire to things. We do have aspirations. I was with my sister who went through a difficult period in her life, a long illness and a death. And her best friend had a dog. She was very devoted to the dog. And She had this statement that I really liked. It was aspire to the person your dog thinks you are. We all have aspirations, and we do want to make a better situation for ourselves and the world. What this teaching encourages us to do is not to project those aspirations beyond the situation at hand. The situation is at hand, and this is what we do when we meditate. We come back to our body and our mind. We come back to the conditions of our life, which include our personal history, our capacities. We work with what is at hand, and we work with this ordinary mind, this ordinary everyday mind, and it's from that place that we meet the world, we meet other people, we meet ourselves, and something happens. Good works happen, hopefully. There's a teacher named Tova Green, who's a teacher at the San Francisco Zen Center, who does hospice work, and she has five precepts for hospice work. The first precept is to welcome everything and push away nothing. The second precept is to bring your whole self to the experience. The third precept is don't wait. The fourth precept is find a place to rest in the middle of things. Very good. Take care of yourself, even in the midst of hard work. The fifth precept is to cultivate don't know mind. In other words, do not make assumptions. Come to a person or to a thing with true inquiry, with true curiosity, not with a view, or particularly not with a preview. Anything else? Anything to say? Would anyone like to share anything? Have a question?
You were just saying when you eat, when you rest, just rest. When you meditate, come to now. Nowadays, life is so busy. We have so many commitments and stresses that when you're eating, you're not eating, you're planning what you're doing next.
Multitasking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is what adds to the everyday stress because you're not in the moment and actually enjoying what you're doing. Our minds don't go far back to the past because we're so busy planning for the future that is very hard. It's not easy, it sounds easy, but it's really not any help in that direction as to how to come back to
the present moment. This meditation situation is for those of us that have done it for a long time, it feels like a natural activity, an extension of our life. But fundamentally, it's a kind of setup. We're setting up our kind of unusual or artificial is maybe not the right word. We're setting up an unusual situation here. And we're doing the same thing that the Buddha did in India 2,600 years ago. And this tradition has gone on and on of this setup, you could say. We deliberately set up a situation where we come to a wall. In this tradition, we actually face the wall, which is kind of like coming to a stop. You know, we're stopping. You know, what are we stopping? We're stopping fabrication, you could say. We're stopping the production of the story or the context of our imagined life. We're actually coming home to our just body as body and just mind as mind. So we're actually setting up something very, very simple. In the context of daily life, you yourself are completely responsible for the busyness of your life. So, first and foremost, take responsibility for that density, that busyness. Sometimes people fill their life with many things and many activities and many ideas and many concepts as kind of the creation of a kind of opacity to not see what is going on. They flood their life. Like leaking, they flood their life with many things. And that's the natural current of life. And this way is to actually go, take this backward step and to go against this current. So you can practice in your daily life when you're picking up a cup, you can really appreciate and enjoy the visual, the sensorium of this cup, like the Buddha said. Oneness is right here. It's not somewhere else, and it's not an altered state. It's right here in this cup. And so when you can, just bring your attention to one thing completely. And turn off the TV. And just sometimes, you know. And disconnect the... what else can you disconnect?
Turn your cell phone off.
Turn your cell phone,
computer off.
A big job, but turning all those things off. Ordinary mind is a mind that's not that's willing to meet something just as it is. Did you have something?
Thank you so much for that Dharma talk. It's really great. I'm Melissa, and it's really great to be back here at Jaikoji. And one of the things that I was very pleasantly, I guess, surprised in a way, when you started the second meditation with some guidance and all. So I teach mindfulness meditation from the Vipassana. And
it's unusual in Zen.
Yes, I went, oh, this is wonderful, how cool. And it made me connect to the openness of how, you know, we can bring in different things and be integrated. So in my teachings, and one of the things that I notice, and people say that it is so difficult to just sit, you know, we go, oh, you just sit, that's all. And it's so difficult to just be in the moment. And so many times when you were talking about the pushing away, and we push away our experiences, and we don't realize a lot of times that's the growth, like that's the treasure, like that's where we really learn, and if we put our attention there, then we expand. And I tell people, just one breath. That's the start. Just one breath. Stop and breathe. And go from there. And then it does. It becomes more natural. It's just a part of life. And it's beautiful. So, thank you.
Thank you. Did someone hear about?
Sounded like church bells.
It did. It was very nicely timed, wasn't it? Well, there's much more to talk about, think about this topic. But I invite us all to appreciate and pay attention to this ordinary mind. Ordinary mind is the way, not a special or a separate mind, not a special state, but just you as you are. It cannot be anything else than that. It has to start there, and it arrives there too. Please appreciate your life, your breath, your lunch. We're just about to have lunch. I hope we can appreciate lunch. I don't know what's made, but we'll see. And appreciate every moment.